Today's episode is brought to you by Oak Tree Products, the ultimate one-stop shop for audiologists, hearing professionals, and sound professionals. If you're looking for diagnostic or screening equipment, this is the place for you. From the essentials to the hard-to-find tools, Oak Tree has you covered. We've personally been ordering from them for years, and they've always come through. We recently just ordered new diagnostic equipment for four offices through Oak Tree.
During the pandemic, when supplies were hard to come by and everything was up in the air, Oak Tree kept things in stock and moving. They've handled supply chain disruptions, tariff uncertainty, all of it without missing a beat. Whether you're outfitting a new practice or just need to stock up, check them out at oaktreeproducts.com. Again, that's oaktreeproducts.com. We will link to them in the episode description and tell them we sent you when you visit oaktreeproducts.com. Welcome back to Hear Us Out, the show where we explore how sound shapes the human experience, the emotions it unlocks, the memories it stirs, and the unexpected ways it connects us. Today, we're joined by someone whose career embodies that idea completely. Dave Egger is a Grammy-nominated cellist, pianist, and composer whose musical path has taken him from prodigy beginnings at Juilliard to the global stage. He has collaborated with a true who's who of artists, Taylor Swift, James Taylor, Paul Simon, Bon Jovi, and so many more, bringing his unmistakable voice to projects that span classical, pop, rock, world music, film, and beyond. Dave's artistry isn't just about genre blending, it's about tapping into the core of what sound can do, how it moves us, heals us, and holds our stories. Today, we'll dive into that journey, the creative risks, the transformative collaborations, and the way he thinks about sound, not just as music, but as a human experience. Dave, welcome to Hear Us Out.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. And I'm so excited about this topic. I can't even tell you. So
we're excited to have you.
Why don't we start with your work really spans genres, cultures, all of that. What have you learned about the universal human connection to sound and music through your work?
It kind of, in many ways, keeps coming back to me to the idea of resonance. And I think, you know, I mean, one of the things that's been really powerful about my career is, and it's been very humbling as well, is that I started out in classical music and I started out as a cellist and pianist. But I was always a traveler and I was always curious. And I loved the idea of all the different grammars of music. I wanted to travel around the world and be outside my comfort zone. And that led me to many, many types of collaborations. It led me to making multiple records of my own in the reggae culture of Jamaica. It led me to a really long career in bluegrass music. It led me to study and live with tribal musicians in the Philippines and Mindanao, studying how they were using music and conflict resolution in the civil war there. And one of the things that's so amazing about the cello is because it doesn't have frets, it's not conformed to European tuning. And so there was something really interesting about taking this resonant wood body around the world to all these crazy locations. And yes, sometimes feeling like a total beginner again, sometimes feeling like an idiot, sometimes, you know, being able to impress people. Sometimes I remember playing for some musicians in Bali and I was playing Mozart and they were like, that sounds awful. Why would you play that? That's awful sounding. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I think that, you know, it's led me to a deep fascination with sort of the psychological relationship to resonance. And I've put out a lot of records in the sort of healing music space and the meditation music space with both piano and cello that it's sort of a lifelong fascination. Like music was a huge healing force in my own life. I had a very difficult early childhood and then a much better later childhood, but a very hostile initial family. And music was like an escape for me. And I think that there's something to me that's very powerful about presence in music, not just like necessarily like development, like I'm playing this and now I'm playing this, but this sense that you really feel and sort of like, especially in like classical Indian music and the alap concept of just beingness with the raga or beingness with the pitch collection or beingness with the harmonic vocabulary. And it's scary because there's a certain in a way, like a certain loss of ego that has to happen. It's terrifying. Sometimes when I'm on, I play on a lot of like sort of records of famous people and I love it, but I always have these moments of total fear where I'm like, for me to actually do my job, I have to kind of almost like let go of my desire to impress them in order to express something more vulnerable and more personal. And it's always a moment that just feels so terrifying. And it must be what actors, I guess, feel being vulnerable on film, where I sort of feel like, oh my God, if I'm really going to show an artist like Louis Capaldi or Ed Sheeran what I actually feel in this section, I'm going to have to let go of my need to be like, look, I'm good at cello and I want to show you I'm good at cello and here's some good cello music that I'm playing, and actually like lean into tone and nuance. And that's one of the things that's been so exciting to me as a cellist, and is just like how much nuance can happen in simplicity, that you can literally take the simplest phrase, you know, and play it just a million different ways. And so I'm excited about the work that y'all are doing, because it seems like very much in the same world that I'm absolutely fascinated with.
There's something in what you just said that I find to be fascinating with music, especially with people who are so accomplished. When you have the capability to be so technically advanced, to find something simple that fits and does the job, can you talk about the idea of really leaning into simplicity with music and having it be what is right? And I think of kind of our world, that when you're working with patience, the art of taking something complex and making it simple and accessible for somebody is an advanced skill. And I'm curious, from your perspective with music, taking all the advanced ideas you have and simplifying it at times.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot in music education lately. You know, I've had a kind of a phase lately where I've been talking at colleges, and often they want me to talk about like hit songs I've worked on, and that's very exciting. But I've been trying to think about like how to break down my own process, because I've never been like a teacher before COVID, so I've never really had to break down my process. And what I came to was this: music school has a tendency to teach you simple solutions to simple problems and complicated solutions to complicated problems. But actually, what's really moving in music is complex solutions to simple problems. If you look at a chord progression like 1-6-4-5-1, that's in a million pop songs, and it's also in every single Mozart opera. The brilliance of Mozart is Mozart found an unbelievable amount of incredibly soulful and beautiful and actually nuanced and complex solutions to a very, very simple chord progression. You know, that then you can apply to so many other situations. So to me, everything's complex in a way, but to make it human, you have to lean into, I don't know, in a way, it's like leaning into the vulnerability of being willing to communicate. I see it almost like vocabulary. It's like when music gets complicated, it's almost like you're using a lot. Like if right now we're in this interview and I was like, serendipity, onomatopoeia, pusillanimous, like, you know, it's like we can use all those words. And sometimes those words are earned. And in certain music, like doing something like a 7 against 6 within a, you know, 13 against 12 with the, you know, several different 12-tone rows going on. In certain music, like Milton Babbitt, that is kind of earned, in the same way that James Joyce can use grammar in complex ways. But it shouldn't be a defense mechanism. It shouldn't really be your go-to. It should be something for an extra special moment. And it shouldn't be used in a defensive or ego. I think that like finding the complexity and the simplicity becomes like a really beautiful thing. And sometimes when I'm working with students, a thing that I'll say, you know, it's like, if you were an actor, and like right now I was like, okay, your job as an actor is to grab that shirt that's to your left in the studio and throw it on the ground and tell me to get off this podcast. Like you would do it a certain way. But then, you know, Meryl Streep would do it like so much better than you. Even though it's the same exact thing, she would create so much nuance and like subtext. And so I just find it so amazing and fascinating. Like there's something so beautiful about being able to play the cello and play a very simple part and watch somebody tear up because of the way that you phrased it, or the way that the resonance moves, or just all the thought that went into just like the contour of how that part was crafted. I think that's, and it's also really fun, of course, to play like virtuoso flashy stuff. And for a moment of joy, or for a moment of, I always think this way, that virtuosity should emerge from emotion. It should emerge from like a need to show off because it's fun, or a need to cry harder, or need to rage because you're like truly rageful and you want to play music that's like, you know, it should have like an intention. I think when virtuosity becomes about excluding the audience, I think it's very problematic. I think music should always be inclusive and pulling the audience closer to you in a lot of ways.
Now, vulnerability is something that can oscillate. We could be more or less willing to share, more or less willing to lean into vulnerability. Is there a time where you might actually be either leaning less into that or just are not feeling that? And then if so, how do you create something special when that's not what's channeling out of you?
That is such a good question. You know, it depends a lot because I'm an artist that plays other people's music a lot. I play a lot of classical music and then I work with songwriters. I also write a lot of my own music, but as an interpreter, I'm doing a lot of other people's music. One of the things that's really interesting when you're working, let's say, on the music of a classical composer, let's pick Beethoven, for example. Beethoven is a composer who's very defensive. So vulnerability isn't necessarily about being vulnerable the whole time. In interpreting a Beethoven piece, a lot of what you're doing is walling yourself up like a character that's very defensive so that those moments when you actually reveal, like if you think of like, I'm just thinking of an example like D major cello sonata, the second movement has this center section where it goes into major that is just unbelievably heartbreaking. And for a second, Beethoven really shows you how broken he really is underneath all this toxic masculinity and alpha dog stuff that's so Beethoven-y. And so it's so much fun in that piece to really build up all this kind of like sort of macho side in the whole beginning of the piece to then be able to like actually really cry with the listener there. So there's, I think, a lot of...
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Art to, you know, truth in kind of expression of the text of how the moments that you're revealing yourself, the moments that you're not able to. And it's very different from composer to composer. I mean, Chopin's a composer. They wrote very much in a vulnerable place all the time. And Chopin mostly lived as an outsider and played for themselves mostly. And so that's a very different space. Schumann had multiple personality disorder and wrote as multiple people. Schumann wrote as a woman and as a man. And so when you're channeling Schumann, you're channeling characters that have different kinds of spaces. I feel like a lot of the vulnerability is hanging out with the music. The same when you're working with an artist from today, when you're actually really trying to get inside an artist. I've worked with Nora Jones a lot. She just composed a new chamber music piece for, I have a new record that's coming out this year where we only, by a duet project with Tasha Warren, we collaborated only with composers that are mothers, and it looks at motherhood today. And Nora Jones wrote a very elaborate and beautiful chamber music piece for us. It was very interesting. Nora's an artist who's like very vulnerable and clear and truthful in her expression. I have a new chamber music project that I do with my duo project with Tasha Warren, the clarinet player. And it's a project, the new record that's coming out of the spring is called Motherload. And we only collaborated with composers that are mothers. And it looks at aspects of motherhood today through 7 very powerful female artists. And it was very interesting. I've worked on several of Nora's own records, but working with her as a chamber music composer now and thinking really about this space of how to be very clear and direct and vulnerable at the same time, but choiceful. There's so much around intention. I know I gave a very complicated answer to your question, and I'm sorry.
No, we like that.
Okay, we like complicated.
But I think that, you know, every artist that you work with has a different way of expressing themselves. And one thing that's really magical for me is to try to sort of get inside that vocabulary. And I guess the vulnerability piece looks a lot at how the text that you're working with musically handles those spaces. I'd say that.
One of the things that we like to ask artists who do a lot of collaborating is about finding musical space for themselves within the composition. So whether that's simplistic, whether it's complicated, how do you find your space without stepping on other artists' toes, but still feeling like you're expressing yourself?
Thank you. I think that's amazing. I think that collaboration is something that I really love. I think it's really great. I think what's challenging about collaboration is that there are people you walk into a collaborative space with where the vocabulary works right away, where immediately you're on the same page and it's just complete magic and you don't even think about it. And that's always something special. And sometimes it's so magical that work happens and you don't even know how it happened. Like you come out the end of the day and you're like, what just happened? Like, what was that? It used to be that when I didn't have that experience, I felt weird or insecure, or when I didn't have a co-write or something right away that felt like organic, that I'd be like, what's going on? I don't know. Maybe I don't want to write with that person. And then I started having a different experience because I started realizing that sometimes the people that you don't click with right away are actually the people that teach you the most, that you actually grow the most by learning how other people. Because it's something that's so interesting when you walk into a collaborative session and you're like, I feel this like this. And you're so sure you're right. And the other person's like, wow, you know what? I don't actually feel that at all. That doesn't really touch me. And you could be like, it should, it does. But then you have to go, well, wait, there might be something to this. I'm like over invested in this feeling around this musical vocabulary. And it's clearly not touching this other person. Why don't we look at this? So I think that one of the things that's been so exciting to me is actually moving past the anxiety of a collaborative framework. Your response is like feeling like you're not on the same page, and then coming to a place where you're finding that like you're actually growing through being able to speak a different language. I remember like one of my biggest concerto appearances in New York was actually Hindemith Concerto. Hindemith is a 20th century German composer who was very academic, whose music I didn't necessarily respond to that much. And it was a really, really big opportunity in New York. And I took it. And I remember like being like, why does it have to be this piece? Like, why does it? Finally, I get this huge concerto appearance in New York and New York Times is coming and everything. And it has to be this piece that I just don't relate to at all. And I spent the entire summer finding a way into that character. And I've never gotten, I mean, literally the New York Times review I got was one of the best I've ever gotten in my career, that basically was talking about how no one, they never seen someone embody this piece like that. And I think it was really just that it was so foreign to me that I had to put, like an actor, I had to put so much thought into the character and like how I was going to say these lines that like I didn't really feel. I was like, I don't speak like this musically. I want to have big lyrical lines. And these are very angular and sort of defensive German academic kinds of things. But then somehow in it, I found this tension that I thought was very beautiful. And somehow those tensions are exactly the magic that makes incredible collaborations. I mean, one of my greatest collaborators of my career in classical music is somebody that I argued with constantly, like nonstop for 10 years. I was in a group with this guy and our performances were electric and we disagreed about almost everything. But somehow that disagreement resulted in very, very profound on stage. I'm not saying that it was the best for me psychologically, but very, very, very profound performances, I think, in some ways. So, yeah.
So what are you typically looking for when someone either seeks to collaborate with you or you are seeking to collaborate with someone? What is something that you start off looking for? Obviously, it sounds like you might not click initially, but you figure out a way to make it work or something, things evolve. But what do you typically look for initially?
I think flow. I think one of the things that I've found that's so interesting is there's been people that I've been fans of that the collaboration didn't go so well. I mean, people whose music I just loved, loved, loved. And then when we were working together, it just wasn't the most incredible flow. And conversely, there's been people whose music I've been like, kind of like, you know, I know who that person is. They're cool. Like I'm thinking like I had like an absolutely incredible collaborative experience with the band Hippocampus. And I hadn't really had strong feelings about their music one way or the other. But Nathan, just the way he is as a collaborator, is so gracious and supportive that where we went, I felt that I had the opportunity to explore. I think a lot of it too is feeling the safety of I don't want to say messing up, because it's not really messing up, but feeling the safety that you can try something outside your comfort zone with somebody without being like fired or judged. You know, there's a lot of scenarios we walk into in film and pop music where it's too hard to try things because you just really feel like you're on the chopping block. You're like, I have to bring my A game. I have to bring everything in my A game. And there's absolutely no room for me to try anything outside of it because I'm nervous that, you know, and some people bring that energy to the table. But my favorite people are people that they just encourage you to explore. And I think that's the thing that, you know, is the most important to me, is feeling like we could try something and then maybe we can go have a sandwich and come back and see if we like it. And maybe we don't love it. Maybe we only love some things about it. And maybe it doesn't, you know, maybe that is okay. And I think that, you know, that's a rarity in very successful musicians, I have to say. But the ones that are like that, they blow my mind, you know, like, because suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, we're working on this thing that like a lot of people will hear. And yet we're taking the time to maybe be wrong, maybe make a version and then tear the whole thing down after lunch and make a whole new version. And I think I really thrive on those experiences because those are the ones where I really grow, where I, you know, the records that have been the most impactful for me are the ones where I feel like I came out the other side a different person. Like I'm sure actors feel that way on films too, where you look at it after the process and you were like, wow, like, we did things that shouldn't have worked and they did work. We tried things that I was like, there's no way that this can work like this. This is never going to be good. It's impossible. This is ridiculous. And yet it was amazing. Or we, you know, I tried sort of my gimmicks were shot down pretty fast. And then I was like, well, I don't know, if I can't do these tricks that I have, what am I going to do in a song like this? So I think that those are the things in collaborators. I'd say, to answer your question more simply, I'd say just challenge. I love the challenge. I love the challenge with a safe space. I think there's a way to do that that's really, even with big budgets and union regulations of time. I mean, I really love collaboration. And over the years, I'd say one of my favorite collaborators is Amy Lee from Evanescence. I've spent, you know, I've worked with Evanescence since 2006, and she and I have written, gosh, 7 film scores together and put out independent records. And one of my favorite things about her is that even though she's, you know, gosh, one of the most famous and most incredible singers in the world and kind of a goth icon, like, her work ethic is so incredible. Like, all that, I remember we scored a film that was an Alec Baldwin, Demi Moore film called Blind. And every single cue, it was a jazz-based film. Never would you have ever guessed that she's who she is. She was just working around the clock, coming up with amazing ideas and just being part of a creative team and supporting each other and being able to be constructively critical of each other in the moments that was important. And I just love that. I think that to have reached that level of success, but then also have the humility to just realize like, oh, now I'm just a composer on a team with some other composers is kind of awesome.
Yeah. And in listening to you talk, there's two things that you've said that really stand out to me because I've never heard anybody describe music in this way. One was referring to Beethoven in defensive composition and also talking about music as a character. Do you think the way that you think about music is different from some of the people that you're working with, and that allows you to bring something unique to the table with them?
Thank you. My dad is a writer. Both of my parents are writers, fiction, you know, English, like writers of words. And I think that as a result, I've always seen music as storytelling. And I think for songwriters, I get along with them really, really, really well. I think sometimes with classical musicians of a certain type, it makes it hard. I think chamber music is always great because chamber music, we all do kind of see it like a story.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And it's really exciting to kind of, it's like being in a play by Ibsen or Shakespeare. You know, it's really fun. Sometimes in sessions or with orchestral players, it's difficult, or in the part of the classical industry that sort of looks at it in a sort of a right or wrong type way, even though it's kind of hard for me because actually I have done really well in that part of the classical industry because I am a very athletic performer. But just to give an example, like, of what I'm talking about in terms of character or narrative, it's like, you know, it's like when we play these historical pieces, it's like if we're not telling stories, it's almost like a weirdness to it. Like, I just judged a competition recently and I watched 75 people play Schumann Concerto that were all under the age of 17. And they all played it with all due respect and love, like it was like a gymnastic stunt. And okay, so he wrote that piece and then he threw himself into the Rhine River in a suicide attempt, ended up in an asylum where he rewrote his music thinking he was writing it for the first time after years of multiple personality disorder. I'm not sure this is a gymnastic routine. I think the piece is a cry for help. And I think that unless you kind of course you want to get the notes right. And of course you want to get, you know, like have some technical representation of, I don't know, refinement for lack of a better word. I don't want to say perfection or anything like that, but like refinement. But at the same time, I feel like to deny to pretend that that was the intention of the artist when they wrote it starts to get very, very silly. I remember sending an email to one of my superiors at the competition. I said, this is fun. However, it's a little bit like having a macho competition to judge recitation of Emily Dickinson poetry. It just feels a little bizarre. It's sort of like we're sort of alpha dog fighting over this vulnerable text. So I think that to answer your question, I hope that I bring something unique to the table. And I think it's important. I mean, one of the pressures that we have as musicians today that I think is really tough is that we have to channel the music of a lot of centuries. Like that's not been the case prior to this. It's kind of tough. I mean, like, you know, when you're playing hip hop and then, you know, an hour later you're playing Baroque music, and then an hour later you're playing an Elton John song, and then an hour later you're playing a Hans Zimmer film score, and then an hour. So it's a very wild space to be involved in so much character switching. So I think also just selfishly, it's the story piece makes it so much more fun and so much more personal. And it's just, I don't really believe I had a really good teacher at Juilliard, and he said to me once, there's no technique for the cello. There's only techniques for different situations. And you should apply the skills that apply to the story. And I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it. If it's, you know, if the new, you know, De La Soul record I worked on, which is so beautiful, I'm not going to bring the same part of me that I bring to a Corelli Concerto Grosso. It's the same me on a kind of like a spiritual, emotional level, but on a character level, the vocabulary is going to be a little different. Mm-hmm.
Is there one piece you've worked on that either has particularly resonated with you personally or one that you've been extremely proud of?
There's so many that have meant so much. I mean, I think that to pick one of the many, I feel like, so my last duo record called Ourself Behind Ourselves Concealed, which came out in 2022, which is with myself and Tasha Warren, worked very hard for about a year. I mean, it was kind of a crazy situation. We got a grant to make a chamber music record the week that the world shut down, and the idea of making music together is pretty impossible when the world shut down. So we commissioned, you know, six composers to work with us and had some really incredible people. Paquito de Rivera wrote for us, and wonderful people. And it was our first time working with Martha Redbone. That I don't know if you know Martha Redbone's work, but she's an incredible artist who's an indigenous artist. And because we had all the time in the world, we spent a lot of time that year on Zoom with her and sort of went through COVID with her on this piece, Black Mountain Calling, that she wrote for us, that was based on her Cherokee heritage from Kentucky. And it was particularly interesting to me because having been somebody in the bluegrass scene who was also had moved to the Appalachian region during that time in order to kind of escape New York and COVID, looking at this piece that was about her kind of overcoming coming from a coal town and the resistance towards success, especially for an indigenous woman. We spent so much time kind of learning that vocabulary, and it was such a powerful recording session too. It was like one of the first times I ever cried in a classical music session. You know, because that's hard for me. I cry in songwriter sessions, but classical music is very technical for me. And so a lot of the time I'm like, okay, I want to get this right. I want to get my shifting right. I want to get my tone right, all this. So to be in that situation and to feel so good about like taking something all the way from an idea, I guess to answer your question more generally, like the things that have meant the most to me is when there's a kernel of an idea and then you really get to see that idea fully realize itself all the way to the end. It's really powerful because a lot of times we do things with a very, very fast turnaround. It's like this project comes in at 10 a.m. They want it back by 5 p.m. with fully mixed and everything, you know, and so sometimes it's sort of like it's like an episode of Chopped. You're like working so fast and like making all this stuff happen and you hope it tastes good and hopefully it does, or you're going to fix it in the mix. But when you actually have that like super unique opportunity to be able to have an idea and have it sort of marinate for the right amount of time, it's extremely gratifying. So yeah.
For most of your collaborations, are you reaching out to the other artists saying, I'd love to work with you? Or are they seeking you out saying, I'd love some cello in this piece and you're the guy we want?
So I'd say the vast majority of them are people reaching out to me for orchestration and stuff like that. I think that like in the last few years, I've had more courage to reach out to other people and start things. I think for a lot of years, I wasn't really confident enough about that. Like I kind of was more reactive to other people kind of approaching me and being like, oh my God, you think I'm interesting? Maybe I'm interesting. So I think, you know, the idea of sort of generating projects is a bit newer for me that way, but really gratifying. I mean, I think both ways, it's really fun. I mean, I think that when someone reaches out to you, sometimes it's hard because it's almost like being an actor in a film. Sometimes they're reaching out to you because you played a specific character that they saw you play. So they'll be like, oh, you're the guy I arranged and played this track called Vita La Vida by Coldplay. They'll be like, can you do what you did on Coldplay? And I'm like, well, I mean, that's kind of like, can you be the character you were in The Office? I mean, it's like, do you really want that? So, I mean, there is sometimes like a bit of like, there's like sometimes a bit of a getting to know each other phase that's kind of realizing like, okay, you know, you heard me in this one context, but I am a bit more than that. I can do, especially for the right amount of pay, I can do exactly what I did on that, but it would be more interesting if we actually grew into something a little bit bigger together. That I think is really fun. And, you know, I think I really love working with artists repeatedly. It's really fun to work with the same artist because it's almost like a relationship. Like there's a certain thing when you work with an artist for the first time, that's a little bit like a first date. You're kind of like showing what it's like speed. It's like, this is what I'm cool at. Look, I'm cool. I got a cool apartment or whatever. And there's something really cool to me about like truly getting past all that stuff and being at a place where you can actually, again, going back to the vulnerability word, you can actually like really kind of sink in and
connect.
Not have to show off for each other, but connect and again, maybe try something that doesn't sound amazing the first time. What some of my favorite moments in sessions are the ones where I'm going, I love saying that sentence. I'll be like, hey, I have an idea and it's probably terrible, but it's gonna lead us somewhere cool. Like I love when I say that. Every time I say it, I'll be like, let me just say it. It's probably gonna be the worst thing you've ever heard, but I really feel like this is gonna open the door to something really cool. Cause it's so funny. It's like it's almost like the room makes the music always. Like there's something so magical when you let go in record making, surrender to what can be made like right then with those people. There's always like this incredible magic that's so different from anything you planned and so much better in a way that's just so hard to, it's so hard to explain. You know, it's never quite what you thought it would be, but sometimes it's just so much more, and sometimes it's so, so different. Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought up the Viva La Vida song because cool. My next question was going to be, what's it like for you to be recognized for a specific piece of a song that I can imagine it being on Name That Tune, where the second you hear even just a piece of that, somebody's going to know the song and that's your piece. And how is it for you to feel recognized in that?
It's so fun. I mean, there's something also really, really fun about like only certain people knowing it's me. Like in other words, like there's part of like, you know, being seen that's really cool. Like it's really cool when you get to play for a whole bunch of people. Like I got to be like special guest at the Goo Goo Dolls at Coachella last year, and there was like 45,000 people, and it's like all screaming, and it's like, yeah, But then, you know, there are these quiet moments that are so cool. Like I was sitting in a coffee shop in Singapore and five songs in a row that I'd arranged and co-written came on. And I was like, and nobody knew. I mean, absolutely no one knew. I mean, it's, you know, Singapore and it's a coffee shop, but I knew. And it was kind of fun. I was like, this is hilarious. Like, you know, these are my parts that I wrote. And like, you know, there's something on a spiritual level, there's something so beautiful too about, I really love this, that these ideas that started just, I mean, Vita La Vida just started in a room, you know, it was just Chris and me and this violinist. And there's something really cool about these things that started so small, touching people's lives in such profound ways. It's so human when you're like, especially when you're at a writing session, or like when we worked on Channel Orange, and like those songs were so young, and then they went out and so many people's lives were touched by them. It's weird. It, in a funny way, it does like the exact opposite of egotism. It has this very humbling effect. It has this effect where it's sort of quiet. It's kind of this weird way that you feel like you're part of a bigger process that really doesn't have much to do with you, but is super cool to like be part of it, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Because you know, you're kind of like, wow, I was there. I could have been someone else. We made these choices. All the like little magical pieces were, they all sort of fell in line, you know? It's so crazy when you think like I think about a song like Philip Phillips Home that I'm part of, and like all the weddings that's been played at, and like all the, you know, and like the hundreds and hundreds of shows we played it at, and people crying, and all the things, this little tiny song did all that good work in the world. It's like, it really makes you so happy to be a musician. That piece of it is just feeling like, I don't know, it's like feeling like you're part of the solution. You know, my parents are really activistic, and I think that, like, I don't know, I always just want to be like part of. Now I'm taking you guys in the recording studio. It's going to get magical.
All right.
Cool.
You know, I want to feel like the music that I'm doing is doing something, not just like, you know, not just like supporting my ego or something, you know? Like, I feel like a lot of musicians, it becomes very capitalistic. But in a funny, I'm entering Mission South. This is like one of New York's best studios too.
Which one?
It's called Mission Sound, and it's not a mission. It's just a studio. There's no dog here, who's really cool too. It might be the dog. I feel like Mr. Rogers right now. All right. Now I'm in the control room here. It's very cool. Big mixing nice. Board.
So what you were just saying about those songs actually leads into my next thought. We'd love asking people on the podcast if there's been a time where you felt like you got to become a part of somebody's story. And I think you talked about it a little bit with those songs and how they influence people's lives and impact people's lives. But is there a specific time where you felt like you really got to impact on an individual level?
Yes, all the time. There's a lot. That's a really heavy question. I think that, I'd say that like what you just touched on is probably one of the deepest aspects of the music space, especially when you're working in pop music. Because there's this feeling, you know, when you're working on a song, there's this feeling of like, we're doing this and it's going out and here's all the fans and this kind of stuff. And then when you think like, wow, those moments that you're talking about where you intersect with exactly, you know, how a song touched somebody's life and you see the worthiness of their, there's the amount of times that happened with Evanescence is innumerable. I can't even begin to say all the, you know, incredible work she's done psychologically in the world, especially with the song My Immortal and all the emails I get that talk about it. And but one story that's a little sad but also beautiful that I wanted to share that happened recently, it was actually a classical music story. It was a person who was a music attorney, and she'd been, I guess you'd use the phrase super fan of mine a little bit over the years.
Nice.
And she was terminally ill in May, but didn't want to tell me. And the concert promoter told me, and she was near the front of the concert. It was a classical concert. And I decided to play Schumann fantasy pieces in this concert. And I've been talking a lot in my classical shows about the lives of composers because it's a way that I find that it can bring the audience into the situation more. And I think that's important. And I've been talking about Schumann, and I've been talking about this particular piece. And I started playing it, and I kind of caught her eye. And sort of really, really connected. And for a moment, I thought, wow, here I'm playing this piece from somebody 200 years ago who struggled with manic depression and mental illness their whole life and wrote this music, not ever realizing that they would become this huge figure in 19th century romantic music. And here in this little concert in Jacksonville, I'm making eye contact with somebody who's at the end of their life. And we're all me, her, and some, I don't know, spiritual entity of Schumann are all kind of having this connectedness right now. And that timelessness thing hit me so hard. I was like, I feel so small and so timeless right now in such a beautiful way. I feel like I'm just a vehicle for this very important moment for this person in the audience, you know, and I'm so happy I can be this for a second. And hopefully it helps a little bit in this moment. So that's a little bit of a, that's sort of a sad one, but, you know, and then on a happy note, one of my best friends, identical twins, who are two, just sent me a text of them screaming the lyrics of one of my songs. So that was kind of awesome too. It's like his kids in the backseat and they're like, and the lyrics are very complicated and kind of metaphoric and they're like screaming them in the backseat. I was like, all right, I can get used to this. This is pretty fun.
So, hysterical. Yeah. So
awesome.
My last question for you, is there anybody who you have not collaborated yet with that is the dream collaboration? Somebody you really would want to work with?
Thanks. I mean, yeah. I mean, I feel like what's been cool for me is a lot of my little kid dream collaborations, I've actually gotten to work with those people like Paul Simon and people like that. So that's been kind of crazy and terrifying and amazing. But I'd say the list of people that I'd like to, Stevie Nicks for sure, without a doubt. Cinda Williams, a lot of writers, just like songwriters that I really admire. Tom Waits, you know, I think from younger artists, like maybe like Shawn Mendes. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I mean, and then, yeah, I'd have to think about that a little bit more. But, you know, I've been lucky. I've been able to work with a lot of my heroes, which is a little crazy. And you have to be really careful when you work with your heroes that you don't like fan person out. You have to sort of sit there. you have to be like, it's really funny because you'll be sitting there and like half of you is like, oh my God. And then they play the music and you have to be like, all right, calm down. You have to like, you're like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's, I have some ideas. How about on the bridge? I play something like this. It's pretty funny. So,
and hopefully
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So for my last question, kind of looking at sound as this big idea, can you talk about what you think it is about sound and music that allows it to be universal across time, across cultures? It exists everywhere. What is it that music is for people?
Wow. That's like a big, massive, huge question. What is music
for people? Couldn't let you off easy. Home.
That's extremely go big or go home. I would say having spent a lot of time in other cultures that don't even have Western tuning systems, I would say that music offers a doorway into the transcendent cross-culturally. I think it offers a kind of human connectivity that it softens hate. It doesn't lie very well. A lot of my study in the Philippines was based on the fact that the tribes that were warring were using music to get along because their music predated their colonialization. Some of the tribes had been converted to Christianity and some had been converted to Islam, but they had the same songs. So they would start a negotiation with a jam session. And I thought that was very fascinating because it softened the room. And it made, so I would say that there's a space that I think music makes people feel less alone. There's a space where I think music makes people feel that their personal story matters more, however they experience it as a listener or a maker of music. I think that it has such a foundational aspect cognitively. And that's one of the reasons that people have such strong opinions when people be like, I like that, or I hate that. You know, they don't have as strong opinions about visual art or dance or something like that. It's because almost like food, it has this incredibly visceral immediacy that with which it affects people. I think that, you know, in a way, being a musician is almost like being a scientist in some ways. In that, like, you know, you're kind of a wizard of people's emotions in a way. You're constantly exploring what's working and what's not working. And the surprises are constant. Like sometimes you'll have a song or a piece of music that you're so sure people will respond to and they just don't. And sometimes there'll be something like that you're just like, okay, this is cool, but it's really kind of only for musicians. And then people will really respond emotionally. And it's really powerful to be part of that process and part of that continual exploration. Like, I'm about to start a record with a new artist right now, and I don't know exactly what we're going to do. And I'm a little scared. You know, I'm scared, like, will we like each other? Will we come up with something good? I've learned that trusting the music is the biggest part of being a musician, that it will usually show you where to go. And if you kind of follow that, even if it seems crazy, if you're like, I don't understand, why are we turning on the Mellotron right now? This makes no sense. Like, that it always leads to something like really, really powerful and profound. And in my own life, it's been so interesting to see it cross so many borders internationally and the like that I never really thought I would see as a young musician.
That's awesome.
Considering Eric gave you a really big question, well said.
Thank you so much. Thanks, y'all. Thank you.
You came so highly recommended and you did not disappoint. So thank you thank you for joining us today. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you on social media, where they can hear more about you, your music. Tell everybody.
Thank you so much. My Instagram is usually how I communicate with people. My Instagram's really fun. It's a side of cello, like a side of fries. So if you want a side of cello with your meal, you can just like look for me. A lot of my music's on Spotify. I kind of have both sort of more complex classical music there, and I have a lot of meditation music. My most recent meditation record is called Dragonfly. I have two records coming out in the spring, a solo record called Aurora Rising and my new duo project, Motherlode. And yeah, I'm really excited to... Oh, and I'm going to be on tour with Foreigner for all of March.
Oh, wow.
Music directing their symphony shows. So if you want to come see us at the Venetian in Las Vegas and have a crazy weekend, then, or a very demure weekend, then you could check that out as well. Awesome.
Awesome.
You guys are great. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry I had some sonic issues, but...
No, all good.
Not at all.
Dave, thank you so much for being a guest on Hear Us Out today.
Thanks so much for having me.